Thanks for downloading this podcast. It's for personal use only and must not be rebroadcast, reproduced, or used in any form without permission.
Tell your friends they can get their own copy by searching iTunes for Radio Le Mans or visiting RadioLeMans.com.
The checkered flag ends the race, but not the race talk. Have your say. Ask the experts. Make your point. Post-race tech. The end of the race is only the beginning.
So it's Michelin post-race tech for the Hyundai Monterey Sports Car Championship. John Hinoff and Jeremy Shaw, along with Shea Adam in the Haggerty Broadcast Centre. First of all, Jeremy, just a quick recap of the points there. I think we got through to GTD, but we didn't do in the race broadcast the GTD manufacturers.
Yeah, there's been a change there too. Lexus came in with a 9-point lead over Acura. They'll leave with a 2-point deficit to Acura. 269 for Acura, 267 for Lexus. So just a really bad day for the Ian Vassar-Sullivan Lexus team.
That is very interesting. Very, very interesting. Shea Adam is with us now as well. Your questions, please. Hashtag Michelin PRT to IMSA, at IMSA Radio. 2.25 hours, Jeremy, of green at the start, another 20 minutes at the end, only 5 minutes of full course yellow. A number of people saying, oh, did we have to have the full course yellow there? That the panel, Nick H saying the panel was on the racing line but not visible. I don't think it was on the racing line. It was off the track. But because the two Mazdas went side by side there, it flipped it back onto the racing surface. Could it have been left there? Was it dangerous? Question? It's a big piece of carbon fibre, isn't it?
You certainly wouldn't want to hit it. That's
well,
sure.
Exactly.
And particularly, if it was just a single category race, it might not be a problem. But with overtaking takes place coming out of turn 11, and so cars are on all sorts of different lines. It would be very easy to be kind of unsighted, and all of a sudden, you run into the thing. So, IMSA doesn't like to throw out full course cautions, I don't think we saw anything different there. I think that was probably a necessary evil. At this point,
A number of people saying, how come Castro Neves didn't get any kind of sanction and not even have it looked at when he ran into the back of the Corvette, which knocked that off in the first place? I have to say, I did think that was worth looking at. It wasn't investigated. It lifted the back of the Corvette off the ground quite clearly. And it wasn't a smart move from Castro Neves, considering. I know every incident has to be looked at, Jeremy, on its own merits. But given everything else that's gone on, particularly with the number seven car, I didn't think that was smart from Elio. He's had an unusually odd weekend for him.
Yeah, I mean, it was a bizarre incident yesterday where he just looked like, we haven't spoken to him, but it looked like he was trying to teach.
It was Philippe Nasser, wasn't it?
Was it
Nasser just out of the pit, yeah, at the start of their session. Yeah.
Right at the beginning of the session, I mean, just even the Castro Neves, he'd only done one lap, and the number 31 car just come out of the pit lane, and yes, it probably did cut across the path of the Acura going into turn three, so it wasn't very gentlemanly, but I mean, it was first lap out of the pits, who really cares?
It's a free practice session as well.
Yeah,
that's
exactly.
The other thing.
Bizarre. Mm. But we're seeing this pattern from race control. They don't like to hand out penalties, quite clearly, and at least not for driving standards. It's got to be something very, very egregious. I mean, even yesterday, which looked pretty egregious to us, it was a stop and I guess it was a stop and hold for a minute.
Correct.
Which during an 1 hour practice session, no big deal. It'd been during a race, different story. And you know, there was no call on the incident a couple of weeks ago either. So, you know, it's I guess you can say there's consistency there.
Well, that's a very sensible as ever from Jeremy Shaw. Michelin Post Race Tech hashtag Michelin PRT. Shea Adam, nice long green flag run at the end. I've got a feeling there was one or two people at the end who, particularly in the prototypes, might have been a bit antsy on fuel if we hadn't had that short yellow at the end. I'm not saying it would have changed the results, not at all, because I'm not sure anybody could have... Maybe it might have made a difference to Renger van der Zande, because we know that car can be a little bit more abstemious in burning fuel. But I think there was a few people a little bit worried at the sharp end of the field.
Yeah, it really... the way that it all played out with the timing and whatnot, Harry Tinknell, I think, is the one who lost out biggest in terms of that caution coming out in the prototype class, because he was the one who had pitted last and they had put him in a rather good position. But again, the team game being played a little bit there too, I think, with the 55 finishing in front of the 77, it being that the 55 is still sort of in the championship hunt. I mean, if the other cars have massive disasters and the 55 wins, it could be Jonathan Bomarito and Harry Tinknell taking home the top prize.
Oh, I love your optimism. I love it.
You've got to have optimism, particularly in this day and age. But the team game coming into play more so and more obviously for the Acura Team Penske organization. I mean, whatever way you want to look at it, 4 wins in 8 races for Elio and Ricky. They certainly have put forward a good argument as to why they should be the champions. And particularly after the strong start that we saw for the Wayne Taylor Racing Organization with the win at Daytona and then the good results throughout the rest of the races, including the win at Petit Le Mans, they've been the ones that everyone's sort of been looking at as, yeah, these are the guys to beat. Well, now you're looking at Acura Team Penske going, hang on a minute, these are the guys to beat. Unfortunately for them, the final race this season is at the 12 Hours of Sebring, which has not been a kind race to that entire team for the last 4 years. So they do have a long uphill battle to try and claim that cup.
Yeah, and a number of people asking about, you know, the swapping around of the two cars. I don't have any problem with that, Jeremy. This is a team game. If you've got two cars, Porsche split the strategy of their two GTLM cars slightly differently. I know, but, you know, there will be people who will look at that and say, oh, that's not in the spirit of the race. It's absolutely in the spirit of the race, and it always has been, hasn't it?
It has, yeah. You know, it's certainly a shame for Ricky Taylor, for Dane Cameron and Juan Pablo Montoya, who, yeah, they've had, what, now 3 straight poles. They didn't get fastest lap like they had in the last couple of races as well. But still no wins. You know, just the one podium finish this year is all they've had. So, this was the second one. They had one last time out at Petit Le Mans. But, yeah, they would have dearly loved to have taken the victory here. And I'm sure if the boot is on the other foot in a couple of weeks' time, then if the two Acuras are running out front, and the championship is already wrapped up, which it would be in that instance for the number 7 team, then they will probably switch places there, because they certainly deserve the victory today. Montoya did a brilliant first stint. He was a good 8 seconds clear of his teammate at the end of that first stint, and Dane Cameron did the same for the rest of the race as well. He seemed to be able, to edge clear whenever he needed to. That was a strategic race for Acura Team Penske, and like I said, I don't think you can blame them for that at all. The end goal of the championship is to win. The season is to win the championship, and that's what they're trying to do. Number 7 car.
Should they have done it earlier on? I don't think it makes it a blind bit of difference here. They could have done it coming to the line if they'd been able to do that.
Yeah, and to be honest, the record book is going to show that Dane Cameron has led more laps, we saw it happening. It was a very obvious pass. And a couple of years ago, actually it was back in 2015, the Porsche GT team was 1-2 at Circuit of the Americas, And Nick Tandy pulled over on the front straight to let Earl Bamber by so that he and Fred McAvecky, who were co-drivers at the time, could claim the win. Good point. Was missed on the cameras. And we all thought that Nick had just had some trouble and Earl had passed him. So I like the fact that Team Penske waited until they knew we would all be watching to make that pass.
Well, and I think as well, you know, there's nothing worse than doing that. And then the car that you've let, you know, potentially you've got to make sure that you're not going to disadvantage both cars. They wanted a 1-2. They still got a 1-2. That's great for Acura. You don't want to put yourself in a situation whereby you allow a competitor car to get in between you or anything like that. And that's it's got to be orchestrated. Definitely has to be orchestrated well. I don't have a problem with it. Peugeot, a few years ago, I remember Peugeot losing... was that one of the first years of the WEC? It might have been. Yes, it must have been, because they only came into the WEC. Might have been the last. ILMC was only running for 1 year. They had the chance at the Nürburgring. The point is, they had the chance at the Nürburgring to swap around their two cars, and that would have made a big difference to the championship. They didn't do it, and the car that was challenging for the championship had a problem at Silverstone and then couldn't win the championship, and the other car was so far out of the championship that it couldn't challenge. They cost themselves a championship. Now, I know that's not the exact situation here, but this could be a championship at Sebring, Jeremy, that the Drivers' Championship could be separated by a few points. And those points that they've got today, the two-point lead that they're taking to Sebring now, rather than a one-point deficit, that could have been a championship manoeuvre right there. And, of course, they won't know that until we get to Sebring. This from... Sorry, Jeremy, go ahead.
Yeah, no, I mean, you know, they came in here with an eight-point deficit and leave with a two-point lead. So, you know, absolutely mission accomplished there. And the Manufacturers' Championship, the good thing about that is whoever wins or whoever finishes ahead between Acura and Cadillac will win the Manufacturers' Championship.
Ah, right.
Even if Mazda wins the race, they're still going to finish third. But whoever finishes ahead of Cadillac or Mazda will be the champions in the Manufacturers' Championship in DPI.
Graham Reid says nearly all green today. Interesting to see how that affected the strategy planning and the need to be flexible within the race. That's very true, Graham. He also asks, and Shea will know this, when was the last time we had a full green race? It's not that long ago from memory.
I think this year.
Yeah, I think
this
year.
We might have had one or two this year.
Yeah. I'd have to go back, and I haven't got that piece of paper near me at the moment. So, Jeremy, now that we've had a quick look at the championships, how are we standing in the main championship? We should be able to confirm, by the way, who's won the GTD Sprint Cup, and that will be the Lexus, as we thought, because they did get to the end of the race. So that's the 14 car. So that car takes the Sprint Cup. How do the other championships stand then in terms of what can still be won? It's tight at the top of the Drivers' Championship for DPI, just 2 points between the two teams there, that being the 7 Acura team and the number 10 Conyngham and Alta Cadillac team. Cadillac and Acura, whoever is ahead, wins wins the Manufacturer Championships. What about GT Le Mans in Drivers'?
All Antonio Garcia and Jordan Taylor need to do is turn up and start the race.
Okay.
They've got a 30-point lead over their teammates, Oliver Gavin and Tommy Milner. They're just going to start the race and they win it. They're already 36 points ahead of Jesse Crone and John Edwards, who are third in the points. So they cannot catch Antonio Garcia and Jordan Taylor, even if they don't turn up.
Right. So it is...
Game over there for Corvette Racing.
Yeah.
For the teams and the manufacturers as well.
Right, okay. And it can only be Corvette drivers who could win that championship now.
Correct.
So, yeah, it's one or t'other. And in GT Daytona, is there still a championship to fight for there when we get to Sebring?
Very much so. I mean, Aaron Tielitz, who led the points coming into this weekend, is now down to third. So Mario Farnbacher and Matt McMurray with the win today, a crucial win for Acura.
Yeah, really.
They've now got a 7-point lead over Ryan Hardwick and Patrick Long, 8-point lead over Aaron Tielitz and a 10-point lead over Jack Hawksworth. So, yeah, that's completely switched around. And it's the same in the Manufacturers' Championship as well, because Lexus came in here with a pretty handy 9-point edge, and they leave with a 2-point deficit to Acura. They're well clear. They are. Porsche is still in third place in the manufacturer points in GTD, 13 out of the win. So it's going to be a major stretch to win that. So it's basically between Lexus and Acura. And again, pretty much whichever one finishes ahead of the other, particularly if they're in the first two or three positions. The good news is if there is a tiebreaker, then Lexus has the advantage. They've got three wins on the overall season championship to the two of Acura.
Right. Okay. So we'll be talking about that, I'm sure, again in a couple of weeks' time. Different time of the year, Shay, for WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca, but a racetrack that keeps turning up these different strategies. Not so much wheel-to-wheel racing today until we got that late race caution, 25 minutes to go, but still plenty going on to keep us interested. And I do think the track temperature played its part today, particularly having not had any running at that time of the day. The teams were really, I mean, even things like start and tyre pressures, they'd have been completely in the dark for that today.
Yeah, I mean, who would have thought that we have people coming into the pits after six laps in GTLM? Yeah. That's supposed to be the professional highest echelon of the manufacturers category. And so
I think they were just reacting to the prevailing conditions, if I'm honest.
Yeah. No, I agree. But it is funny that we had a situation where they didn't get any relevant track running in practice. They didn't know what to expect. The track was much hotter than it had been during any of their running yesterday or this morning in qualifying. So it really did make an extra challenging race. But I mean, we have to pause for a minute. We're in November and we're racing at WeatherTech Raceway Laguna Seca. Normally this race takes place, okay, next year will be April, but traditionally it's been late September, early October or May. This is a very different situation for all of us.
Yeah, absolutely agree. It kind of works for me, these truncated weekends. I'm sure the WeatherTech guys would have, the WeatherTech Championship guys would have liked more time on track, Jeremy. You give anybody a bit more time, I'm sure they will take it. It was a bit of a bizarre schedule for them with just one free practice session on Friday. The early free practice session on Saturday morning, then Saturday lunchtime, and then qualifying before the race today. There's not much room for error. You lose a bit of track time. That can make a mistake. Didn't make any difference to the Acura, by the way, that would have lost a whole session in FP2. But to me, it just spikes things up a little bit when there's a little more to still be found out by the time you get to the race time. One or two more variables. That was what I was trying to say.
Yeah, you know, these tightened up schedules certainly make things more intense for the teams, and you know, in some ways it's easier. It's certainly cost saving measure, I would say, for the teams, but it certainly makes it more pressure even than usual, I think, going into a race weekend.
So coming up, ladies and gentlemen, we have our final race of the season at Sebring International, officially 11th to the 13th, isn't it? The races that weekend. First of all, we've got to say, because I will forget, cracking job, Jeremy, in what they've done in shifting things around and getting these races off this year. This could have been a very different looking. It is a very different looking season. It could have been a lot less racing.
Yeah, you're absolutely right. I mean, they've done a fantastic job. Everybody has it. All the partners, all the racetracks, all the staff at IMSA as well. Everybody has pulled together to make this season possible. To have as many races as we've had is pretty remarkable. DPIs, of course, they're down one race because we didn't have the Detroit weekend. So they're down to a nine race championship. Normally it's 10. But for everybody else, they've had pretty much what they normally would have. So it's been a tremendous effort all the way around, and hats off to everybody. And the racing, by and large, has been great. Today certainly wasn't the greatest of races until the final few laps there, which was a little bit surprising, perhaps. But by the same token, we're probably due one race that isn't super exciting all the way through once in a while, aren't we? So at least we can catch a bit of a breather.
So we move, Shea, into your old neck of the woods down in central Florida. The cars are on track from the 11th. Our coverage, I'm guessing for this, because we haven't seen the TV schedule as yet, but I would think would be starting on either Thursday or Friday, with Porsche GT3 Cup Challenge USA by Yokohama on the schedule, as well as Lamborghini Trophy. Of course, it's the last race weekend for the Yokohama and the current version of the Porsche. We've got Michelin Pilot Challenge, as well as the 12 Hours, the 58th running of the Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring, presented by Advance Auto Parts. What's Sebring going to be like? We've been there for Encore before, and we've had a variety of different weather conditions. How's that going to play, do you think, in the next couple of weeks?
Well, right now in Fort Lauderdale, it's about 84 degrees. It's been raining on and off for about the last week. Right now in Sebring, it's 77 degrees, and it's been raining on and off for about the last week. The ground is going to be very saturated. We've had a particularly wet season this year in Florida. So if there's any rain, there is nowhere for it to go. And by the way, the forecast for the next week has thunderstorms 5 out of the next 7 days. So it is one of those situations where we could get to Sebring in November, and it feels a whole heck of a lot like Sebring in March. But then you've got the championships on the line. And as you mentioned, the GT3 Cup Challenge for the last time ever in that iteration. We've got the Super Trofeo with two races on Friday. And then we've got the Michelin Pilot Challenge for their championship finale, and the IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship for its finale. It's going to feel like a very different Sebring. And I would be remiss if I didn't mention, our good friend Chuck Dressing always says every 5 years in Sebring, something weird happens every fifth year. Well, 2015 was the last weird one. This one we stand to be a real barn burner.
Well, and we finish off with another big endurance race, Jeremy. Not the one we were expecting at Motul Petit Le Mans, but going into Sebring this time of the year, the clock's having changed. It's going to be a bit more darkness going into the evening time. Does it substantially change the way the Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring will look at?
I don't know. As Shea said, I think it's there's more perhaps variables, question marks, perhaps going into the weekend, perhaps than usual. As you say, certainly there's going to be more nighttime running. But that's not necessarily a bad thing, I don't think. So, I'm looking forward to it. Of course, most of the championships, or some of the championships, these are still very much up for grabs in the Michelin Endurance Cup as well, going into that final round.
Good point. And we will lay that all out for you when we start our broadcasting from that 58th annual Mobil 1 12 Hours of Sebring, presented by Advance Auto Parts. The final round of the 2020 IMSA WeatherTech Sports Car Championship and those Challenge Series as well. Wow, what a season we've had so far. And to finish it off on the concrete of Sebring is going to be a real treat. The Hyundai Monterey Sports Car Championships is over and done. The short races are done. We'll finish off with another classics. Thanks to Jeremy Shea, our colleagues in Charlotte, and of course Tim Gray and his team up in London. I'm John Hindor from the Haggerty Global Broadcast Centre and Michelin Post Race Tech. Thanks for joining us this weekend from Monterey. Good night.
This program is a Radio Show Limited production.
Tell your friends there's more at RadioLeMans.com.